It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. And thank you for joining me this morning. Is the season that we all, those of us who love the outdoors, especially love, has kicked into full gear with the arrival of September 1st. And as I say every year, not only to all of you who are nice enough to listen but to, on the show, but to all my friends who I see in person, this is the time of the year when there just isn't enough time, 24 hours in the day, the sun is setting sooner and sooner. And there's so many things we want to do. We want to go catch a big muskie. We want to go catch a spawning rainbow. We want to go duck hunting. We want to go pheasant hunting. We want to go and catch the fall colors. We want to go, in my case, to northern Manitoba and smell the some of the greatest air in the world. And that's not just the muck from the marsh. It's the wonderful aspen trees and see the colors. It's fall is that magical time. And for me and for many of you listening, it's probably the most magical time of all. This past week certainly has been a roller coaster kicking off the fall season. The dove season across North America, or across America, opened on last Thursday, the 1st of September. It is in Canada, the mourning dove is a songbird. And in Illinois, we had mixed results. This was a better breeding season than we've had in recent years, as many of you know who've been listening to the show. It's been a tough period of years for mourning doves throughout the Midwest, with cool, wet springs, relatively wet summers, very difficult breeding conditions for doves who make their nests out of a few twigs. And when it rains or the wind blows, their nests just fall to the ground. Or if when their chicks hatch, it's cold or it's damp or it's raining, they die. So this year was a better production year, and things were looking very good until, of course, we hit the monsoon season of late August, which seems to be increasingly prevalent in the Midwest. And many of the areas that had sunflowers planted simply rotted on the stalk. But the dove hunting throughout parts of the state was pretty darn good for the first few days. And then we had a little bit of a cold blast. We had a lot of rain. Of course, it was nearly 100 degrees in Chicago, or it was 100 degrees in Chicago in certain places earlier this week. So it's been up and down. But overall, I'd have to say that the dove season in Illinois is better than it's been on the whole for the last several years. The same cannot be said of what's happened with the start of the blue-winged teal season, which was greeted with flooding on the Illinois River and certainly high water on the Mississippi and flooding on the Kaskaskia. This has been the summer where we finally had exceptional growing conditions for riparian river areas. Smartweed and millet were doing very well. All the natural foods were finally really having a good year after several years of flooding. And along comes late August, and the next thing you know, we have in Chicago, we have 4, 5, 6 inches of rain, and everything heads south into the Des Plaines and the Illinois, and then all of a sudden, the Illinois River's at flood stage. It's at 22 feet in Henry, and all the bottomlands are flooded. All the natural feed is not under just a couple inches of water, which, of course, would be ideal. It's under feet of water, and if you went down the Illinois, as I did recently, down to Peoria, and then took a tour back up along the river road, it was so sad to see the effort and all the money and time spent by individuals who manage for waterfowl and look out across the floodplain and just see floods. So unfortunately, we are in Illinois at least not going to have what had looked like an absolutely bumper, fantastic crop of wild foods for migratory waterfowl. Once again, Mother Nature, not entirely Mother Nature, because of course we've engineered this flooding ourselves with the all the water going down the Illinois and the siltation and opening the floodgates. But we are going to once again not have great habitat in the Illinois River Valley, which does not bode well once more for migratory waterfowl. The shifting from migratory waterfowl to a subject that was recently on the 100th anniversary of our national parks. And what can you say? One of the greatest treasures in the world, with the foresight, and I had Carrie Luft on a few weeks ago talking about it, with the foresight that individuals had over 100 years ago in America to create our national parks. And it's one of the great things about having an anniversary is individuals focus on taking place. And with the case of our national parks, the focus on is on what's not taking place. It's on the decay, things falling down, crumbling infrastructure, crumbling roads, trails that are not serviceable. It's a national disgrace to actually think about what's taking place in our national parks. And the backlog of maintenance is hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, in fact, of work that needs to be done just to bring our parks up to a place where they, not even exceptional, where they're just serviceable. And it brings us back to the whole discussion of how did we end up here? And it's really no different if you were to get in a boat, as I've done recently, and go in the Chicago River, and go down the Chicago River, you look at the decaying of the infrastructure, the complete, absolute falling apart of the revetments and all the wood that was used to build the city of Chicago to keep the Chicago River out. It's all way past its expected lifespan. And our nation's infrastructure is simply in complete collapse. And I don't say that in any way as a political statement or anything. I say it as a fact. I mean, you can't pick up a newspaper without reading about bridges that are being closed and roads that aren't working and infrastructure all over the place, canals, locks, dams. They're all crumbling. But in the case of our national parks, this is something that we relatively easily can fix. We don't seem to have the will to fix it. And that's what I want to spend a few moments talking about. And maybe it will become the, the cause celeb for WGN Radio, at least the Great Outdoors show, is how do we fix our national parks? How do we fix our state parks? The answer is through volunteerism and through putting together, once again, a civilian conservation corps. And, of course, the Civilian Conservation Corps, otherwise known as the CCC, came out of the Great Depression. And we don't want to have another Great Depression or another Great Recession to have this discussion come up. But it's the idea that young individuals seeking summer work can go and work for smaller wages than union workers would make, or smaller wages than other individuals would make, but that they can go and work in our national parks and in our state parks and rebuild the infrastructure. At the height of the CCC, there were nearly 4 million Americans working on the infrastructure of our national parks and our national monuments and our national treasures. 4 million individuals. That was to put people to work because they needed to go to work. And I'd have to say in America today, we must be mistaken if we think there aren't individuals who are looking for work. And I know we hear about the unemployment rate being below 5% and all that. I don't know about you, but statistics are garbage in, garbage out. And in the case of our labor force, there are millions of people looking for work. Why not bring back the CCC in some form or another and enable individuals to go to work building our state parks, rebuilding our state parks, rebuilding our national wildlife refuges, and rebuilding our national parks? And that's before we even get to the disgrace that's going on with our national forests. And as we move into the final leg here, the presidential election season, you hear nothing, absolutely nothing, about the decay of the outdoor treasures of this great country. And the other way to solve this problem is through volunteerism. There are hundreds of thousands, and I would bet there are actually millions of individuals that would lend a few hours to lend a helping hand to do something to make their communities better. In fact, I know that's the case. Just look around at groups like the Nature Conservancy and Chicago Open Lands, Chicago Wilderness, that great collection of organizations. What do? They volunteer. It's not just picking up garbage, it's fixing things. In fixing our national parks, we need more than just someone walking around picking things up. We need individuals with hammers and nails and some know-how how to rebuild things. I mean, you go into Yellowstone Park, and you look at the hotels in Yellowstone that were built during the Great Depression. That's now 80 years ago, and nothing has been done. It's just a national disgrace. And hopefully we can make some progress as more and more Americans like myself and hopefully you become aware that this is our treasure. This is our legacy that over 100 years ago, individuals said, this is worth saving, and it's worth saving in perpetuity. which, as I always say, as a friend of mine says, is a very long time. And here we are 100 years later, after the national park system was started, and it's crumbling around us because we either don't have the political will to say we're going to do something about it, or we don't unleash the power of the private sector to have people go and volunteer. They can do it. We can do it. I can do it. It's just a matter of us saying this is important to our country. And maybe we get ourselves a little bit away from some of our electronic gadgets. I look at my kids when I say this and say, let's go do something good for our country. Let's go help. But we have to set up a system where we can volunteer. And that's what we don't seem to have because we're politically stymied in Illinois by absolutely archaic union laws, labor right-to-work laws, and then also draconian penalties if you violate them as a private citizen. So I'll have more on that in the coming weeks, but I think it's a really important national discussion, a national subject, and certainly a subject for the state of Illinois, whose state parks are in the worst condition of them all. And it's not because people want them to be that way. It's because the legislature has stopped us from being able to improve our state parks and volunteerism. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the great outdoors. And when I am, I'm going to take us to a little bit of a trip up north quickly to talk about some things that are going on in the prairies. And then if I have time, I want to talk about higher education. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here and it's always tough on the road. But when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. I hope you're enjoying the show. And if you're just joining me, thanks for doing so. This is Charlie Potter, your host on the Great Outdoors Show on WGN Radio here in Chicago. And I'm going to bounce north for just a moment up into the prairies of Canada, southern Canada, as well as Dakotas and eastern Montana, where the beginning of the Great Migration is unfolding early September. And it's a year which looks as though we've had pretty good breeding success for migratory birds after what started out to be not looking like a very good year. So if you are someone who thrills at the sight of sandhill cranes or swans or geese, certainly we have a lot of geese, but a lot of those geese don't even come from the prairies anymore. They're right here. And if you love the smell of marsh and the rise of sun and decoys, the reports are this is going to be a pretty good year for migratory waterfowl. Weather, of course, will be a determinant overall, as I just talked about at the beginning of the show with the flooding on the Illinois and how that has really can change birds' habits. But at least in the pipeline, as they say, there do appear to be a fair number of waterfowl coming south this fall. And whether you want to go to the Mississippi out to the Keokuk Pools in Iowa and see the great concentration of rafts of canvasback, it's one of the largest staging areas for canvasbacks in all the continent, or whether you simply want to bob up in the Channel Lakes in a duck blind and hope to see a duck or two. This is the year in which they've said that we will have a pretty decent fall flight. Moving from fall flights, I want to talk about what is the single biggest impediment to the future of hunting in America. And for many of you listening, you're probably about to read my mind and say it is hunter education and hunter recruitment and hunter retention. And what are we going to do about this? We have in Illinois a situation where we simply cannot have individuals who want to obtain their hunter education certification so they can go hunting. We have a situation where the impediments are so large that thousands of young hunters and adult hunters are falling by the wayside because they cannot complete the requirements that have been set up by the state of Illinois. Fortunately, I believe there's something underway in the Department of Natural Resources working its way towards the governor that will have Illinois turn this all around and become a national leader in how hunter education is going to be delivered. And I think the details of this will be coming out shortly, but it is an incredible opportunity for the state of Illinois to correct what has been a long-time failure in a system that says you have to have a hunter education certificate if you're going to go hunting. And there's nothing wrong. In fact, I'm fully in favor, as I'm sure many of you, most of you are, well, if not all, in fact, I think we all are, of having individuals be properly trained before they go hunting. That is certainly not only you wouldn't want someone driving a car if they weren't properly trained. The same is true of hunting. But the way we've arrived at a system where the government mandates the number of hours that you have to take, puts it in. This was all designed long before the internet existed. It's not a question of using modern technology. We're back in the dinosaur age of going and sitting down in a classroom and having volunteers. And by the way, the volunteers cannot be paid. So individuals from across America and Illinois are volunteering to be hunter education instructors because they believe it is so important to the future of hunting. But they don't get paid for doing that work. It's a volunteerism effort. Also, then the classes have to be held in some location. These have to be coordinated with the state of Illinois. And a few years ago, the unbelievable situation occurred under the previous administration where the state of Illinois did not have the funds to print the books on which individuals took their tests. So here you had all the courses coming up in the summer. I remember talking to Mark Miller, who was the director of the Department of Natural Resources at the time, and classes were being canceled across the state because there was not enough money to print the books that people were supposed to take into the classes and on which to take their tests. It's unbelievable how broken our system is. And here we are, in supposedly a paperless, you know, world. Of course, it's not. The idea of printing a booklet to take a test today is in the dinosaur age to begin with. But the notion that Illinois is still doing this, we are still requiring individuals to show up in person, to sit in a classroom, in a place that people can't get to, at times that are not convenient. It is no wonder that we are simply losing the next generation of individuals who want to go hunting. And it's a national requirement now in many states. If you want to hunt big game, you have to have taken a hunter education course and have your certificate for hunter education. So if you're going elk hunting in Colorado and you're 50 years old and you're exempted from the hunter education course because you were born before 1980, guess what? You have to take a hunter education course to go hunt big game in Colorado or almost any western state. And where are you going to find that course? And how are you going to register? And where do you get the time off from work to go take the class? Or it's on Saturday for 10 hours, and you've got soccer with your kids, you've got football, you've got gymnastics. It is forgetting that America's lifestyle has changed. And this is no longer a time when we just have lots of time on our hands, not that we ever did. But the pace of everything has changed. And Illinois, in the next couple of weeks, if I understand correctly, potentially may be announcing a wholesale change to the way hunter education is done. And if it occurs, it'll be one of the bright spots in the Illinois Department of Natural Resources and one of the bright spots for the governor of Illinois as his efforts are to have Illinois once again become a national leader in conservation, hunter education, hunter retention, hunter recruitment. So let's hope that happens. Stay tuned. We'll be among the first to report it when it's announced, if it's announced. This is Charlie Potter. I thank you so much for listening this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll be back next Sunday morning with more on the great outdoors. Have a great week. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of America, 720 WGN.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Okay.